Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 16, text 62. Yosmin snatva mad akride devadin tarpayej jalaihi uposha mam smaran archet sarva papai pramuchyate yosmin snatva madar kride yosmin snatva madar kride devadim starpayej jalaihi Uposha mam smadan archet sarva papai pramuchyate yosmin snatva madakride devadim starpayej jalai Uposha mam smadan archet sarva papai pramuchyate yaha who asmin
in this
Kaliya's lake in the Jamuna River
snatva
bathing mata kride
the place of my pastime
Deva Adin,
the demigods,
and other worshipable personalities.
Tarpayet,
gratifies.
Jalaihi,
with the water
of that lake.
Uposha,
observing a fast.
Mam,
me.
Smaran,
remembering.
Archet,
performs worship.
Sarva papai,
from all sinful reactions.
Pramuchyate,
he becomes freed.
If one bathes in this place of my pastimes and offers the water of this lake to the demigods and other worshipable personalities, or if one observes a fast, and duly worships and remembers me, he is sure to become free from all sinful reactions. Purport. According to the Acharyas, the Lord spoke this verse to make it clear to Kaliya that he could by no means remain in the Jamuna lake. Although the Lord had mercifully pardoned the serpent and ordered him to go to the ocean with all his associates, Kaliya should not even consider requesting to remain in the lake because it was now to become a holy place for spiritual pilgrims. Om Ajnanati Mirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam rupakada mahyam tadhati shapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatapadakamanam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Pradijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hori Priye Vansha Kalpitarubhyascha Kripa Sintobhya Eva Cha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yosmin Snatva Madakri De Devadim Starpayej Jalai Uposha Mam Smaran Archet Sarva Papai Pramuchate. The lake had now become special because of Madakri De, because it was a place now of Krishna's pastimes. Of course, everywhere is Krishna's kingdom. Everywhere is Krishna's property. But where Krishna personally appears and performs his activities becomes a special place. Especially when Krishna appears in his original form. That place is as good as Krishna. Araja Bhagavan Brajesha Tanaya Tad Dhamma Vrindavan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipable, and his abode, Vrindavan Dham, is equally worshipable. There's no difference between Krishna and Vrindavan. They're identical. And within Vrindavan, there are so many particular places where the Lord has performed his activities. Yaha Nitya Lila Koilo, Yaha Sava Lila Koilo Sri Nandananda. The places where Krishna has performed his activities. Because Mam Smaran, one can remember Krishna particularly. In this place, Krishna has killed the Keshi demon. In this place, Krishna has subdued Kaliya. In this place, Krishna has humiliated Indra, broken the pride of Indra. In this place, Krishna has lifted Govardhan Hill. In this place, Krishna has stolen the clothes of the gopis. In this place, Krishna... Yaha sabalila kailo shrinandana. All over Vrindavan, Krishna performed so many wonderful activities. And therefore, by going to Vrindavan, one naturally remembers Krishna. One naturally remembers Krishna. And remembering Krishna means one's life becomes successful. Yam yam vapi smaran pavam tyajityante kaleva tam tam evaiti konte asara tad pava pavita. Is that right? No. Smaran mukva kalevram yap prayati samad pavam yanti natra sanshaya. Yes. One who leaves this body thinking of Krishna attains to Krishna without a doubt. Yes. Chajajante kalevram. Let's see exactly. Yeah. Antakale chamam eva smaran muktva kalevaram ya prayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra samshaya. Whatever one thinks of at the time of death determines one's destination. And one who thinks of Krishna certainly goes back to Krishna, back to Godhead. And that Krishna has performed so many wonderful activities, particularly in Vrindavan. Therefore, the devotees worship Vrindavan. Ananda Balohari Bhaja Vrindavan. The Vrindavan Dham is such a wonderful place. One will naturally remember Krishna. The Goswamis used to wander around Vrindavan, and everything would remind them of Krishna. Such a special place. The rest of the world is full of things, places, infamous places. Or this place is where General Custer made his last stand. This place is where the George Washington met the British. Or this, they remind us of something which is of no permanent value. Probably not of any much temporary value either. It reminds us of something which is really junk in the mind, because the human mind is not meant for thinking of all these rubbish things. There was an actor, I forget who it was. He was notorious for not memorizing his lines. He would just have them there, I guess the prompter or something, but he wouldn't memorize the lines to the movies in which he appeared. And he explained why. He said, I've memorized practically all of Shakespeare's plays, most of his sonnets. Maybe he didn't memorize them, but he memorized, he said, Hamlet, King Lear, Othello, most of the sonnets. He said, so with that, why do I want to have these rubbish lines from these stupid movies running around in my head? Shakespeare is better. So if Shakespeare is better, how much better is Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita? So the human life is meant for filling the mind with the valuable topics of Krishna. The valuable topics of Krishna. So this place where Krishna had performed this extraordinary pastime of chastising Kaliya had now become a sacred place where one would naturally remember Krishna. And remembering Krishna means sarva papai pramuchyate. One becomes freed from all sinful reactions. Pavitram paramam bhavan. The personality of Godhead is pure. And by coming in touch with Krishna, therefore, one becomes pure. Asnaviram shuddham apapavintam. He's pure and purifying. So by coming in touch with Krishna, just as by coming in touch with the sun, any filthy place is purified. The sun shines on the fields where people pass stool and urine, and those places become antiseptic. So we also, when we come in touch with Krishna, we become purified. That's our good fortune. Sarvapapa, not some, all. Sarvapapai pramuchyate. One is delivered from all sinful reactions. Therefore, it's said about the holy name of Krishna, by chanting even once purely, one can be freed from more sinful reactions, the reactions to more sins than one is able to commit. That's Krishna's potency, that's Krishna's purity. Krishna is so pure that even the impure becomes pure by his contact. The supposed dancing with other men's wives, that's not very pure. But when Krishna does it, it becomes pure. Killing is not very pure business. Bloody, messy, sinful business. But when Krishna does it, it becomes completely pure. The demons killed by Krishna, therefore, attain liberation. They become instantly freed from sins. And so by remembering Krishna, that's the essential point here. One has a tendency to perform some rituals to... one goes to a holy place and does some rituals, goes to a temple and performs some rituals, goes to a Tirthasthan, temple or a mosque or a church and does some rituals, holy place rituals. So the rituals are mentioned here. You can observe a fast, you can take bath in the holy river. But the real purpose is mam smaran, to remember Krishna. Otherwise, just taking a bath, that's all right. But the real purpose is to think of Krishna. That's the idea. Therefore, it's yad tirtha buddhi shalale nikarati chit. If someone just goes to a holy place and bathes there and thinks, yes, now my pilgrimage is finished, he's missed the point. The real point is to associate with the saintly persons who frequent such holy places. That's the real idea. To advance in Krishna consciousness, to remember Krishna, to think of Krishna. But that's possible by saintly association. Remembering Krishna means associating with Krishna's devotees. The definition of a devotee is he'll at once remind us of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, this is a real devotee. That by seeing him, you'll think first-class devotee. By seeing him, you'll be reminded at once of Krishna. So the purpose of visiting the holy places is to seek out that association. The purpose of going is to remember Krishna, to become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, people go to the holy place for getting money, for making a profit, for finding a partner. That's not the purpose of going to Vrindavan. It's to remember Krishna. And remembering Krishna also, there's some process. We should think of Krishna under the guidance of a pure devotee. Anusmaran. Anusmaran means remembering by following. Anukirtanam. Chanting by following. When we follow, then our practice becomes perfect. Otherwise, if we invent our own process, that I'll sit down and simply chant like Rupa Goswami and I'll remember all Vasudeva, then that's not very good. That's not likely to be effective. We should follow Mahajana Yena Katasa Panta. We should follow the Mahajans under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. Then our practice, then our attempt to remember Krishna will be properly performed and our life will become successful. Okay, some questions.
Can you explain a little bit about how Mayapur Dham and Vrindavan Dham are not different?
How Mayapur and Vrindavan are not, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radha Krishna are not different. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nayanya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not different from Radha and Krishna. Therefore, as Vrindavan is not different from Krishna, Mayapur is not different from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is equal to Krishna, so their dhams are also equal. That's the algebraic explanation. Things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. And by going to Mayapur, naturally you remember the activities performed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You remember Lord Chaitanya and his activities. That's my opinion.
Do you know anything about Kaliya's, that maybe we haven't?
About Kaliya that you haven't heard? Have you read Bhagavatamrita? In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the Sanatana Goswami, at the end, is it Chaitanya, is it Brihad Bhagavatamrita? Or is it Krishna Lila Stava? One or the other. Maybe it's Krishna Lila Stava. Sanatana Goswami tells about Krishna dancing on the hoods of Kaliya, but the way he tells, is there Krishna Lila Stava here? I think it's there. Is that book on the shelf? He tells about Krishna dancing on...
No, on the other side.
Right here next to Krishna book, I think, right? He tells about Krishna dancing on Kaliya's head, but he tells the pastime in a little different way. We'll break it. Okay, and I hope it's here, not Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Forget sometimes which book is which.
In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's described that that the pastime takes place in how all the residents become, the same as in Krishna book. So there's a description of it, but I don't remember.
Oh, then it's Krishna Lila Stava, where it's described differently. As Krishna performs these pastimes again and again, sometimes there may be some little difference. So let's see. Yeah. This Krishna Lila Stava is written by Sanatana Goswami as a way of remembering Srimad Bhagavatam. It's in essence a summary of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. He's offering obeisances and remembering, in summary, the activities of a chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. I think 108 obeisances and punctuating. So he's remembering a pastime and offering obeisances. Remembering a pastime and offering obeisances. And this way, it's like remembering, by the summary, you remember the long version. So it's like a little memory key in one sense, although that's trivializing it, perhaps. But by remembering, in summary, these verses describing Krishna's pastimes, he remembers the whole pastime. So he describes, let's see, it's not so long. Let's see. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Let's see, yeah. Maybe it is Brihad Bhagavatam. Let's see. Anyway, we can read here because this is nice also. It must be Brihad Bhagavatamrita. At the end, volume 3, last volume. But this is his description. This is his summary of chapter 16. Tunganipa samarudham sarparadha viharanam kaliya krodha janakam krudhahi kulaveshtitam. You climbed a tall kadamba tree and sported in the serpent's lake. You made Kaliya furious at you and became entangled in the coils of that angered serpent. Mohamagna suritvargam shashuko kulavikshitam mahotpata samudvigna vajan vishta gitim paje. As your dear friends sank into bewilderment, the cows watched you with tearful eyes. Alarmed at fearful omens, everyone in Vraja set out to find where you had gone. I offer you my worship. Pada chinapta margam tvam mitta praya svabandhavam Rama Rakshita Nandari Mumurshu Vrajashochitam. By the marks of your feet, your family found the path you had taken and became like corpses. Lamenting for you and wishing to die, Nanda and the other Vrajvasis were kept from giving up their lives only by the efforts of Balaram. Namaste Sriya Dukkagna Sarpa Krida Visharada Kaliyahi Panaranga Nata Kaliyamardana. I bow down to you, destroyer of sorrow for your dear ones, skillful player with the snake, dancer on the stage of Kaliya's hoods, subduer of Kaliya. Kaliyapana Manikya Ranjita Sri Padambuja Nija Gandharva Siddhadi Gita Vajyadi Nartita. Your divine lotus feet shone with the glow from the rubies on Kaliya's hoods as you danced to the songs and music played by your servants like the Siddhas and Gandharvas. Padambuja Vimardati Namita Hindramastaka Raktogari Raktogari Vibinanga Dina Kaliya Samsmrita. The pounding of your lotus feet pushed down the heads of the king of serpents. Wretched Kaliya, vomiting blood, his limbs broken, finally recognized who you were. Nagapatni Stuti Prita Hitarto Chittadandakrit Krodha Prasada Gambhirya Mahapunyaikatoshyehe. You are pleased by the prayers of the serpent's wives. O you who punish suitably for one's benefit, your anger, the depth of your mercy, you are satisfied only by the most righteous. Nirupadhi Kripa Karin Sarpastri Pratya Dayaka Sarvartha Tyagi Bhaktartya Swangri Reka Chitodaga. Granting the serpent's wives what they prayed for, O bestower of causeless mercy, you marked that serpent with the signs of your feet, the same signs aspired for by devotees who have given up all other goals of life. Achintyaishvarya Mahiman Nana Jiva Svapavasrik Nana Kridanaka Kridin Svaprajaga Kshamochita. Inconceivable in power and glory, you create the inherent natures of the diverse living beings. You treat every sort of thing like a toy in your play. You are able to forgive the offenses of your creatures. Nagastri Pati Pikshada Jaya Kaliya Bhashita Agrahya Shrishta Dushtago Yogya Mohita Nigraha. To the serpent's wives you gave back their husband in charity. Victory to you, to whom Kaliya said, since it is you who made this polluted creation and its evil sins, you should not be too harsh on the bewildered. Svanka mudrankitan ahindra murdhan Kaliya shashana purvastana pitahindra suparnaja payaparit. O chastiser of Kaliya, you stamped the heads of that serpent king with the signs of your feet, sent him back to his former home, and swept away his fear of Garuda. Nagopayana Hrishtatman Kaliyati Prasadita Jamuna Radha Sangshodhin Radot Sarita Kaliya. Your mind pleased by Kaliya's offerings, you showed him great favor and then exiled him and purified the Jamuna's lake. So that's Sanatana Goswami's summary of this 16th chapter that we've been reading. Did you find Kaliya pastime?
Beginning of it's a little bit different.
Yeah, there's more stuff, because that's what you were asking for, was more stuff. So it's described in the when Gop Kumar goes back to Godhead and joins Krishna's pastimes, the pastime, Kaliya pastime, is described. I'm skipping some verses because they match what we've already heard.
Well, the interesting thing at the very beginning was that he ran there alone. I can't remember how he...
Yeah. One day while playing on the shore of the Jamuna, Lord Krishna, Nanda Nandan, heard that Kaliya had come back to his lake. So that's what it is. So he heard that Kaliya came back. Yes. So he was expelled from Raja. But then one day, Krishna heard that Kaliya had come back. So he rushed there alone, swiftly climbed a nipa tree, and dived into the lake, splashing water onto the shore. That's the way it's described here. That he came back. Yes, come back to his lake. Puna agatam, come again. So then the pastime takes place pretty much the same way.
There's no contradiction there. There's just something we don't know totally yet.
Yeah. But then, it's nicely described, beautifully described in Sanatana Goswami's poetry. And then things change a little bit. Suddenly the Lord stopped his self-invented sport, that is, being wound up in Kaliya's coils, and freed himself from Kaliya's grip. He climbed up on the serpent's thousands of upraised, outspread hoods and extended his lotus arms. Taking hold of all his beloved gopis at once, Krishna briskly raised them onto the hoods of the snake. Those hoods, delightfully swaying back and forth, appeared like rows of jeweled platforms, creating a most impressive sight. Krishna artfully danced with the gopis on those most amazing stages, accompanied by many celestial singers and musicians. Thus the Lord, the source of all amusement, enjoyed his rasa dance pastime.
I knew there was a lot we were missing.
There's always something new.
Because it went on for such a long time. I mean, the time things like the rasa dance, time encapsulated thing.
There's more. Nanda and the others on the shore, brought back to consciousness by Balaram, gazed at Krishna with delight and surprise. Having thus subdued the king of snakes, Krishna, grinning, seized the shawls of the serpent's wives, the Nagapatnis, who were offering him prayers. From these garments he made a long rein, and with his left hand playfully pierced and threaded Kaliya's nose. Mounting the serpent like a horse, Krishna toughly drove him forward, all the while with his right hand happily playing the flute. From time to time, Krishna forcefully urged Kaliya on with the flute as if it were a whip. Thus he showered great mercy on Kaliya by making that serpent his carrier. The Nagapatnis offered Krishna clothing, fragrant paste, flower garlands, and priceless jeweled ornaments, and Krishna placed these on the serpent's hoods. Then, with the Padma, Utpal, and other lotus flowers those wives had brought to offer him from the Jamuna, and with the same ornaments he had already put on Kaliya, Krishna decorated the gopis and himself. While the king of serpents, with his countless mouths, recited prayers to Krishna, Krishna emerged from the lake, making all his friends and family dance with joy. Together with the troop of young cowherd girls, most amazing Krishna dismounted Kaliya. The serpent was filled with happiness, for he had obtained great favors and benedictions difficult for even Garuda to achieve. So that pastime is described. It's mentioned in Bhagavatam that Kaliya would sometimes like to be Krishna's carrier, like Garuda. So here his desire was fulfilled.
And that's just a tiny fragment of the pastime. There's so many more.
There's more and there's more. This Brihad Bhagavatamrita has a lot of nectar.
I've heard that maybe Kaliya still exists somewhere.
Well, Prabhupada said that when he went to Fiji. On the island of Fiji, it seems there's some tradition about a serpent dwelling somewhere nearby in a cave. And Prabhupada said that, as I heard it, that this may be Kaliya. And so Prabhupada established Krishna Kaliya, the Krishna Kaliya deity in Fiji, in Suva? Yeah, in Fiji. So that's the only Krishna Kaliya deity, I think, in our society, probably established there. Very nice. So when you go to Fiji, then you can remember this pastime. It's become a holy place for remembering the Kaliya Damana Lila. Subduing Kali.
This is sort of a little bit off the subject. There was a devotee, Kula Pavana, was here. He was in Poland.
Mm.
He's in North Carolina, I think. And he told me that in Poland, this in reference to the Naga race, that there was that Poland was a portal.
A what?
A portal for the Naga race. Naga. And he said, so they have so many architectural designs with Nagas all in it. He said, because it was explained that in the ancient times, this is how the Nagas...
How the Nagas showed up. They'd come in through Poland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Always knew there was something strange about Poland.
But that's, I think, politically incorrect.
Well, how many poles does it take to... But this is the devotee that they'll, by seeing anything in the world, they'll think of Krishna. If there's some legend about a snake somewhere, then the devotee will be reminded of Krishna and Kali. If it's said that the Nagas have a portal, snakes have a portal, then again he'll remember Krishna and the Nagas. If it's said that, just like this Dwarka, this Los Angeles, it's such a special place. I got in trouble with the devotees in Los Angeles last time I said terrible things about LA. But anyway, it's William Faulkner, in words unrepeatable in the temple room, has really put the finger on Los Angeles. But for a devotee like Srila Prabhupada, it reminded him of Dwarka. Because it's on the west coast, because it's on the ocean, because we have an opulent temple there. So the place which might be considered as good as hell, Prabhupada saw as being Dwarka in relationship to Krishna. This way. Somebody else? Mm-hmm.
Using all of our senses to try to remember Krishna. And one thing was a game, the word association game, where you say any word, you go down the line, and you give a word to the next person, like tree, and then they have to come up with something that reminds everyone of Krishna, using tree in a sentence. So it was a really good exercise that, you know, it would be a nice way to remember Krishna, just like every word, practically every sentence, every topic, you can can associate that with Krishna.
Yeah, the planet of the trees.
I'm involved a little bit by the, your exposé on the pastime of Kaliya, because in my mind I'm thinking, wow, these are things like Kaliya, because, you know, Prabhupada encapsulated it somewhat in the Krishna book, just so we'll have a, you know, you got the nectar, the full nectar, but it's there's all these details that, I mean, you could go on and on. So I had to think about, thinking about Agassur, or, you know, what's going on with that, or, you know, what were all these wonderful things that are...
Namo nanto lilaya devaya tubhi. I offer my obeisances to your unlimited pastimes. They're unlimited. There's so many pastimes, and each one is unlimited. We're just getting the summary of the pastimes. Each one is unlimited. And there, Sanatana Goswami is digging out more. You heard that Kali and his wives could take different forms?
When Kali's wives, they offer the prayers to the Lord, that they took like human form.
And when Kali's wives offered prayers to the Lord, they took human form. I don't know, I have no such information.
It was Atma Tattva Prabhu, I believe, who mentioned that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe there some literature. I'm not aware of everything. Mm-hmm.
Philosophical point, Maharaj, since it's your field of expertise in working with translations and editing, someone may say that why would we go anywhere else other than the original book that Srila Prabhupada had given us, a Christian book? How can we understand that's not some form of saying, you know, we don't need just Prabhupada, we can go, you know. I'm just saying that doubt may enter the mind, may could have said it, and I know that it's not wrong.
Well, there's so many, taking Krishna book as an example, there are so many things that are not quite right. Of course, not that it's all terrible, but here and there you'll find mistakes, especially our translators into different languages like Polish and Ukrainian and whatever, Russian, they find mistakes. So one example is, well, two examples. Let's see. One is that in Krishna book it's mentioned that the city of Dwarka was surrounded by cannons. And one of our translators thought that seemed kind of strange, like anachronistic, that there would be cannons surrounding Dwarka, you know, like Fort Sumter or something. There would be cannons surrounding the city of Dwarka. So she went to the production manager, I think Govinda Madhava, and, you know, do we have the tapes for this? And of course we do for most of the Krishna book, because when Jadarani was painting, she would the tapes were being sent to Satsrupa, Satsrupa Maharaj in Boston for transcribing. And after, or when they would arrive, Jadarani would also make crude copies of them by sticking a microphone near the speaker of the tape recorder. She would make copies and then listen to them while she was painting. So in that way, we've got copies of Prabhupada's dictation for most of the Krishna book. For the other books, we don't have the dictation. Prabhupada recycled the tapes. But for that book, we do. So Govinda Madhava pulled out that section with the description of Dwarka. And when they listened to it, they found out what Prabhupada had said, that Dwarka was surrounded by canals.
Canals.
Prabhupada said canals. So the transcriber heard cannons, but it was meant to be canals. And so then they looked in the text, in the Sanskrit, and saw that, yes, it was canals. So that's been corrected. Another one again found by the translators. Someplace it was said that once in the city of Kashi, within the barricades of Varanasi, there was a great drought. Anyone see a problem with that? Once within the city of Kashi, within the barricades of Varanasi, there was a great drought. Hmm?
Kashi and Varanasi are the same place?
Yes, Kashi and Varanasi are the same place. Benares, Kashi, Varanasi, they're all different names for the same place. So what does it mean? Once within the city of Kashi, within the barricades of Varanasi, there was a drought. Yeah, that's exactly right. Did you know?
Yeah, I heard it.
That they went back to the tape, because it's a puzzle. Within the barricades, what is this? Barricades of Varanasi? And that Kashi was within the barricades of Varanasi? They went back to the tape, and what Srila Prabhupada said was once within the city of Kashi, within brackets, Varanasi. Brackets, of course, were Prabhupada's name for parentheses. So that's how the barricades of Varanasi got into the Krishna.
We'll have to build some.
Hmm?
He said it, we'll have to build some.
Yeah, right. I had a devotee, you know, declare his faith to me by showing me that he was a real devotee, because he was convinced that since Prabhupada had said there was a planet of trees, there must be one. You know about the planet of trees?
About
the planet of trees.
There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita, Pitrinam Aryamas Chasti. Among the Pitris, I'm Aryama. You know, Aryama was the person who took the post of Yamaraj when Vidura came on earth, when Yamaraj became Vidura. So the verse says, Pitrinam Aryamas Chasmi. Among the Pitris, I'm Aryama. And in the purport, Prabhupada says that there's a planet of trees presided over by Aryama. So we always just accepted it, that far out there's a planet of trees somewhere. But what it is a planet of pit trees.
Pit trees. The ancestors.
Yeah, of ancestors. Pit trees. It's Pitri Loka. Aryama is the presiding deity of Pitri Loka. But it came out in the first edition of Bhagavad Gita as the planet of the trees. It's like the sequel to Planet of the Apes, you know, Planet of the Trees. And it was a wild experience. I had this little twerp from Long Island, you know, declaring to me, if Prabhupada said that there's a planet of trees, I believe it. Okay, kid, you know.
Maybe, but he didn't.
Yeah, maybe there's a planet of trees, and maybe you should open a temple there.
But you have to be careful not to destroy the rainforest.
Yeah.
Environmentally.
Yeah, environmentally sound temple. So there's so many things. And people make it out that the editors think that they're better than Prabhupada, and that they, you know, they'll have new realizations and are better than Prabhupada, or something like that. But it's just, Prabhupada instructed Pradyumna that in the books there should be no mistakes, that if there's one mistake, it murders the whole book. So he said, do two things. Number one, correct the existing mistakes. And number two, try to make it so that in the future books there'll be no mistakes. He said, keep a list. One time he was giving a lecture in Hawaii, and the word for word meaning was being read, and Purushadai, I think, was the word by men. And Prabhupada said, by men? No, it should be by cannibals. And then he instructed, he said, keep a list so that in the next know, the next printing, it could be corrected. So the idea that, you know, everything was perfect, and Prabhupada's idea was whatever is there, it must be kept because it's there, is not consistent with my experience or the instructions I received. Prabhupada said, make it perfect as far as possible. Yes. Errors should be corrected. Not that errors should be worshipped as the mistakes of the acharya. It's not that the mistakes of the typist are the mistakes of the acharya.
He didn't make the mistake.
No.
The translator, I mean.
The editors made mistakes, the typist made mistakes. Even sometimes Prabhupada made mistakes that he expected the editors to fix. But there's not much of that in Bhagavad Gita as it is. It's mainly the typists, the editors. And there's big, there's that site, Gita Revisions Explained, on the internet, which shows side-by-side comparisons of, like, before and after and why, comparing to the original manuscript. So you can see what's going on. There's some serious errors. Purports left out. Patram pushpam palam toyam. The whole paragraph that's been restored. That was in the original abridged edition, but didn't make it into the unabridged. So now in the second edition it's there. A lot of things like that.
What would you think would be the heart of, I mean, I can understand it materially speaking, but it seems to be a sort of like endemic within this material world, an inability to trust someone or to...
Well, I understand it psychologically, that, you know, the inability to trust someone. There have been a lot of deviations since after Srila Prabhupada's departure, a lot of betrayals of trust, a lot of things that have been invented, and disasters, and so on. So people naturally become distrustful. It's not unreasonable or inexplicable. It's understandable that with so many calamities and so many deviations caused by senior devotees who've been highly trusted, the devotees are naturally, some devotees especially, are naturally distrustful by nature. We assume that if something is different, it must be wrong. You assume that if something is being done, it's probably being done wrong. You assume that your leaders are probably betraying you, or there's at least a good chance that they are. It's sort of almost like shoot first and ask questions later, or assume that they're screwing up unless it's been shown otherwise. Our default is usually that we trust unless we're shown to have a reason not to trust. And because of bad experiences, some people have gone the other way and assume that you shouldn't trust unless it's shown to you otherwise. I can understand that and sympathize with that, and maybe even sometimes go along with that or adopt that as a policy. But then accepting that as a policy, it seems to me that the evidence is overwhelming, really, that the editing done to Srila Prabhupada's books has been a work of restoration rather than a work of whimsy or a work of deviation. Deviation and restoration are two different things. Just like some of our devotees have taken on the service of restoring some of the paintings from Srila Prabhupada's books. Different devotees. Narayan has this, you know, is in the art restoration business, and his son and daughter, Kula and Shakuntala, have also been trained up and take part in that same work of art restoration. So they've voluntarily undertaken the service of restoring some of the old paintings from Krishna books, Srimad Bhagavatam, and so on, which really get messed up. Just time messes them up. Sometimes there's vandalism, you know, somebody scribbles in the temple on a painting. They crack from dead atmosphere. They're treated badly. They're left, you know, sitting somewhere in the prasadam rooms where dal and vegetables can be thrown at them, splashed on them. Or they're just left covered with dust somewhere in a storeroom. Or so many things. Paintings have been sometimes very badly treated. So the BBT is trying to see to their being properly preserved. And Kula and Shakuntala have done nice work in that regard. And sometimes even there are botched attempts to restore the work by people who don't really know what they're doing. So they try to take off the dirt and then they wind up taking off the paint also. But when the works are restored by devotees like Kula and Shakuntala, who know what they're doing, then it's wonderful. They look like the original paintings again. After 30 or 40 years of neglect and mistreatment, they can look really shabby. And even just from time, they get this kind of, they lose their color, they varnish, discolors, and so on. But the expert art conservator, art conservationist, knows how to restore the original colors, how to make the cracks disappear, how to get rid of the dirt, and so on. So you get the original painting again. So I don't think that's a disservice. It has to be, you can't change it, you're changing the painting. Yeah, you're changing the painting because we know what they're supposed to look like. We've seen the printed books, we've seen the transparencies, we know what these paintings are supposed to be, and it's not what we're seeing now. So then going by the original transparencies, going by the books, they restore the paintings so nicely. So that's the idea, going back to Prabhupada's manuscripts, going back to the original sources, we see, well, what did Srila Prabhupada intend here? And sometimes we see, well, it's been misunderstood by the editor, so we didn't get what we were supposed to get. Especially back in the 1960s, the editors were not very experienced in understanding the philosophy, the transcribers were not very experienced in hearing Prabhupada. We're talking like 1967, 1968. So it's understandable that there were errors, but not wonderful to preserve them. How much is left in the service of re-editing? That's always a good question. I think Dravida Prabhu has gone through practically all the major books, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ishopanishad. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya is a big project still to be done. Even the people, paradoxically or ironically, some of the most outspoken opponents of book changing, as they say, of revising the books, have been pounding on our doors, demanding that we revise teachings of Lord Chaitanya. The book was originally edited by a devotee named Ray Rama, and then re-edited during Prabhupada's time by a devotee named, by Hayagriva Prabhu. And Hayagriva Prabhu's fixed some of the features of the editing, of Ray Rama's editing, that needed some fixing, some grammar, some other stuff. But on the other hand, he lost some of the flavor of the original. He lost some of the flavor of the original. And apart from that, there are things that are just not clear or wrong according to Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we've been printing Hayagriva Prabhu's edition, but so then, well, all right, go back to the original edition. But no, the original edition also, you know, there were reasons why Hayagriva Prabhu felt that the original needed further work. So now we've gone, Dravid has gone back to teachings of Lord Chaitanya to try to get the best of both worlds, the best from the first edition and the best of the second edition, and correct things that have been shown from Chaitanya Charitamrita to be misunderstood, and try to straighten things out. It's particularly difficult with teachings of Lord Chaitanya because there's no original manuscript. For Bhagavad Gita as it is, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have the manuscripts to look at. But for teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the manuscript has long since disappeared, so there's nothing to see. We have to go by whatever we have in the original printed book and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And that's all there is. So that's a big project. That's, I think, the main project still to be done. And then we have a conference called Errors in English Books, where translators or readers can report errors they find. Like I was reading about Prahlad Maharaj a few days back, and there was something about the Daridra Narayan or Poor Narayans and Dhani Narayan or Rich Narayan. So it should have been, the first Narayan should have been singular, but it was plural. Simple error. So I sent off a little note to errors in English books. This is supposed to be singular. That's a very small error. Sometimes bigger errors are found. It's something like finding bugs in computer programs. There's always one more. And just when you think you've got it, you know, you found the last one, another one shows up. So it's, we would like to just shut the door and say, okay, no more, we've got them all. But there's, then some translator somewhere will find another one. I found one in Bhagavad Gita as it is. It wasn't, it was an error that we hadn't found the first time. Sanskrit that had been, there was a little bracket showing where the Sanskrit was supposed to go, and the Sanskrit editor had guessed at which verse to put in, and he guessed wrong. And when I looked at it again, it was clear what it was supposed to have been. I could look at the Baladeva Dibhushan's commentary, and it was clear there what the words were that were supposed to be inserted. So that's another one that went to errors in English books. So at this point, there's not much. We're finding, you know, small stuff. But, you know, always something, something. So we keep discussing, shouldn't we at some point say, okay, this is it, after this, no more? And perhaps we will, but in the meantime, people keep coming up with things like the canons of Dwarka and the barricades of Varanasi.
Was that in the Krishna? I mean, was that actually in the Krishna book? Or was
it yes, yes.
There were canons around
the world. Yeah, canons was in the Krishna book, and the barricades was in the Krishna book. These things were there. Yeah.
I don't remember about the canon, but that does, I mean, that's a very vivid example, wonderful example.
Yeah, like the Quaker Oats example, you know, shot from guns. Those who remember the old Quaker Oats advertising. So, yeah, there are others. There are quite a number of examples. In errors in English, Gita Revisions Explained, you can see a lot of examples. Just wrong verse, that the Sanskrit verse was put in and it's the wrong verse. There are prayers offered. If I had the original book, I could quote it, but there's a place in the ninth chapter where Kunti prays, O my Lord, your face is covered by the glowing effulgence of your yoga maya. Please remove that covering so that I can see your blissful form. It's in the Yoga Maya Samagrata, that Mudo Yamnabhijana, it's in purport to that verse. And there's a problem there. Anyone recognize the verse? Yeah, you've read all this stuff, you know. No? What's the verse?
Well, it's not Prem Kunti, it's Sri
Upanishad. Yeah, it's Isha Upanishad. Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasya Pihitam Mukham. Oh my Lord, your face is covered by your glowing effulgence. Please remove that effulgence so that I can see your form of bliss. That's the verse that's being quoted. But in the first edition of Bhagavad Gita, it's attributed to Queen Kunti. And what happened there is that they skipped a step. Queen Kunti mentions the Yoga Maya in her prayers. And then there's Isha Upanishad. But they left out, you know, they like jumped the bridge or something. And so they got Kunti praying from Isha Upanishad. That is a problem.
From one who is looking critically, that may have created doubt.
It may or it's just wrong. It shouldn't really be like that. There's another place. Rajasastu Palam Dukkham in the Bhagavad Gita. From the mode of passion, grief develops. Grief develops. Dukkha means grief. But in the first edition, it was greed. You know, one of those hearing things again. It's Rajasastu Palam Dukkham. Misery develops, greed, grief. But they heard greed. Oh, it's not, it's true. From the mode of passion, greed does develop. But that's not what Krishna says there. Dukkha. Misery. There's, on and on it goes. There's more and more.
So for people who are, having any, attachment, the original documentation, I mean, all of the historical original documentation is maintained for historical purposes.
As far as possible. Some things are lost, like those manuscripts and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. We've undertaken a project at the BBT that we call the Edit Trail Project. As we have an audit trail, we have an edit trail. It's, the head of it is a devotee named Govinda Madhava, who's an old BBT devotee. Was our German translator and production manager in North European BBT. And he's in charge of the Edit Trail Project. What he's doing is, in cooperation with the archives, first they take all of the manuscripts that we have and digitize them. So let's take Bhagavad Gita. There are actually about 3 or 4 different manuscripts of Bhagavad Gita in different stages. So they're all digitized. Then they're put, actually he's doing it as an internal website, so they're put on the site. Then the first edition is there. Then the second edition is there. Then Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary in Sanskrit is there, which Prabhupada consulted to a great extent. And Vishwanath Chakravarti's is there. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, which Prabhupada also sometimes drew on, will be there. So that the original sources Prabhupada was using will be there. The original text of Prabhupada's manuscripts will be there. Wherever there was a tape recording, which is just for the introduction, that's going to be there. The any notes made by the editors at any point, that will be there. And so on. You know, everything that's relevant, any correspondence where Prabhupada wrote to a devotee, to an editor, said this should be this should be that will be included. So that anybody who wants to research the history of the book will be able to go back there and see what's going on. We're also, that's going to be part of a larger project called the Text Repository Project, where basically because everything's gone digital, the BBT needs to go digital. We no longer give the printers films, a shot from pages to from which to print books. Now, these days, you give them PDF files. You give them everything in, as a digital file. And which file do you give him? What do you use? Because, say, for a book like First Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, all we have are the phototype set copy from the 1970s, pasted and filmed. Now, do we give them that? Well, that's pretty old and broken up and has problems with it. Well, then, do we give them the text from the folio? Well, that has proofreading errors in it and other mistakes. Well, do we give them... Well, didn't the North American division create a new... who's got the latest version? Should we shoot from the 1993 edition printed by the North European BBT? Or should we... You know, nobody knows where to go exactly to get the last edition. So we're going to make all the books digital in what's called XML, for those who know those things. Make them all digital, and then have a system by which every correction entered will be logged. This correction was made by this person on this date for this reason. And it will all be kept so that you'll have an audit trail. You'll be able to trace back and see what was done by whom and for what reason. And you'll always have the latest up-to-date version. Anyone in the world, the European division, the American division, Indian division, can go to that repository and get the right file to give to the printer. So that's the edit, and it will, that repository will include everything that Govinda Madhava was working on, the whole edit trail thing, as well as the audio tapes. All of Prabhupada's audio tapes will be there, all of the paintings, because now everything's digital. Audio is digital, visual is digital, text is digital, everything's digital. So our goal is to have all of the BBT's holdings, as it were, in digital format, and be able to locate it also, because if you've got, you know, 1,000 photographs, which is the one that you're looking for, where do you find it? So it's a big job. And where Pancharatnapur was coordinating the specifications at this point for that. And we're using our preliminary plan is to use a kind of software that's being used by major university libraries for this sort of work. And it's technical and it's ambitious, but it seems to be the right thing for what we want to do. And it will afford us the opportunity to keep a proper history. In the 1960s, so many things went on. You know, you just did things and rushed them through and you didn't say, well, let's document what we're doing today. So there's a lot that's not documented and there's a lot that is. But going forward, we want to be able to document what the BBT does on Prabhupada's books and on other books that we produce.
Maharaj, when Govinda Prabhu was here last time, he pointed out to few of us the differences in English translation of the Guru Vandana prayers that we recite every day.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about history of that first translation.
I don't know about the Guru Vandana prayers. That seems to be something Dravid is up on. I don't think I'm up on.
Like a new song book, there is a new translation.
I just answered your question. I'm not up on it.
Okay.
That's Dravida.
Will the repository be available to scholars and devotees in general, people in general? Will it be like a web?
It's a good question. What will be the availability? The software will have what's called access control. Access control means according to...
Access control means nobody can make changes, they can only view.
Well, access control means that different people get different privileges. Some people can see but not touch, some people can see and touch, and maybe some people can't even see, depending on what the things are. It hasn't really been decided yet how much will be available to whom. Certainly, everything will be available to qualified researchers. For example, Srila Prabhupada was asked by Rameshwar Maharaj whether we should just make the manuscripts of the books available, but Rameshwar suggested that we should lock them up and not distribute them because they would create confusion. And Prabhupada agreed to that. But Tamal Krishna Maharaj, when he was doing his thesis, wanted access to Bhagavad Gita as it is, to the manuscripts. So he had a legitimate purpose, and the BBT made those manuscripts available to him. They're available to translators also, for example, because they have a need to know, they have a legitimate purpose. But we're reluctant, especially at this point, just to make them available to the internet crowd, so that they can just say, see what they did. Because in our experience, they're not always sober people. And they have the capability to confuse more than enlighten.
Take out context.
Yeah, amazing the extent to which people misunderstand what shouldn't be misunderstood. But some people are dumb. Some people are dumb, some people are ill-motivated. Some people are crazy, really mad, or a combination of the above. And some people are sincere, but, misunderstand. But when somebody's qualified, then we're happy if they see these things, because then they either verify that we did things right or find things that we did wrong. Like those translators where they say, what is this, canons? So for them to see it is very good. So it's still to be decided. First thing is we know we have to have it. So we're working on that. We know that we want to have access control so that it's not just everything thrown everywhere. For example, the paintings, those are in the form of digital stuff. And we may not want to make the digital stuff available to every pirate in India who wants to make a potato chip wrapper and is looking for some good art.
Herb bottles.
Yeah, herb bottles are okay.
I have a question there about
if you want to go, you can go. It's 9 o'clock. Yeah.
How people are doubting the authenticity of these things. And to me, it's very like enlightening to understand that this is being done, but that somehow or another the difficulty rises because people are afraid that we would change and become like the Bible or something like that or any of these things. That's the name.
Yeah, it will become like the Bible or this or that. Yeah, I mean, they're legitimate concerns. Anybody can get in and do a hatchet job. Anybody can get in and do anything. There are problems with changing and there are problems with staying the same. If you stay the same, you're preserving errors. And if you change, you're leaving yourself open to errors. The BBT has sometimes thought, we'll make a policy. No one can make any changes in any of the books. This is it. But, we're all going to die, and then 20 years later, so whoever's in charge of the BBT looks in and says, well, this is ridiculous, Look at all these errors. We have to do something. And they're going to be less... Well, they won't have had the experience of being in Prabhupada's personal association. So we're trying, rather than just do something like say, well, whatever is there, it's perfect. Or whatever is there, that's what's there. We're trying to set the standard of proper discretion. That you don't change unless you have a legitimate, documented reason. If you can show that the text is really been misedited or misheard or something, then change it. But otherwise, just because you feel it would be better or because you have a different philosophical idea, no, that's not acceptable. So that's been our approach, to try to set proper editorial standards, which, to my understanding, is how the best publishers work. They don't say, we can never change Herman Melville because Moby Dick is a perfect book. Rather, what they do is they say, well, let's look back at those earliest manuscripts of Moby Dick and try to get the most faithful edition we possibly can. And that's what the scholars do. And for them, Moby Dick is like Bhagavad Gita. You know, they have as much reverence for Herman Melville as we do for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We wish they would do it the other way. They would have as much, if only they had as much reverence for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as they have for Herman Melville, their lives would be successful. But anyway, they do. They have such high regard for the book. But they strive to see that the edition that they have is as faithful to the author's original intentions as they can possibly come. And that's the policy of like the best publishers, the ones who have the highest integrity, the highest standards. So we want the BBT to be a publisher with the highest integrity and the highest standards. Yes?
So do you foresee a finality in the editing process?
I don't know. It's always the question. Is there an end?
No, but what I mean is whether there's an end with, you know, in the immediate future or the far future, will there come a point?
Yeah, I mean, this is... You can never change anything?
Yeah.
That's always the question, you know. Is there an end? Is there a point where we say, all right, now on December 31st, 2012, this is it, no more corrections. We think about doing that, and every time we think about doing it, we find another Canons of Dwarka or Brackets of Barricades of Varanasi. And the problem, a further problem is that we can write the paper and say, this is it, 2012. But in 2030, someone comes along and says, well, that was, you know, Jai Doida and his old group, but who cares for them? Why do that?
But shouldn't that be seen as practically like King James coming and changing
them? Well, should it be like King James? It could be, but like King James. You mean like King James, that it should never be changed?
No, like, or like King James can change, you know?
Well, you know, it's first of all, let me say a couple things about the Bible. Because the Bible scholars kind of get a bad rap in ISKCON. Devotees really don't know what biblical scholarship is, and all they know is they changed the Bible. But in terms of biblical scholarship, really, modern biblical scholarship, what do? They go back to the oldest manuscripts. They get, you know, if Dead Sea Scrolls turn up all of a sudden, then they say, oh, we had the wrong thing on this page, you know, it was actually this, it was actually that. They try to get the most faithful version they can. Or, going back to King James, you know, we read King James, and it's a little stiff these days. Thus saith the Lord. You know, thou shalt, blah, 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 blah. And really, that doesn't make it anymore. For us to go through that kind of text, saiths and doeths and perceiveth and... all of that stuff, words that don't even mean, some of them, what they used to mean. So now they come out with new editions of the Bible where it says, thus says the Lord, you shall, because that's English. English changes. And if you don't do that, you just say, no, it has to be preserved as it is, then you lose it. In fact, the translators of the King James edition, if you looked at the intro of the King James edition, they had the same problem. That some people said, you're keeping all these technical terms that make the book hard to understand. And some people said, you're taking these technical terms and making them too popular, turning them into using popular words instead and losing the meaning. The moral is you can't win them all. Or you can't please all the people all the time. But... the biblical scholars are not demons. It's not that they just aim to get their own ideas in. Now, yeah, we go back to the council of this and the council of that. That wasn't necessarily about the Bible anyway. It was about Christian doctrine, not about, you know, what we're going to put into the books or take out. The whole Christian analogy is rather a difficult one, because they didn't start off with just books that were written, and then all you do is hand down the books. They were, the first books were written, you know, probably hundreds of years after Jesus. Even the Gospels attributed to Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, there's a question of whether they were actually written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, or whether they were written years later by people who put to paper the oral tradition. So you wind up with, and then, you know, there weren't printing presses back in Galilee in those days. So you get the Christians basically, first of all, handing things down by word of mouth, and finally writing things down. And then every time you want to write it, you have to hire someone to write it out in longhand for you. And so you get, you know, this manuscript someplace in Syria, and another manuscript someplace in Palestine, and another manuscript someplace in Africa. And then you have to figure out which one actually is. And it's not so easy. And yes, things do get added and things do get subtracted. And so you get serious problems in the Bible. But it's not really just that, you know, at such and such year, some king declared that we're going to go in there and we're going to, you know, we don't like this, we don't like that. We're going to knock out all the texts about reincarnation, because reincarnation is, you know, thumbs down on reincarnation. But devotees have this sort of simplistic idea that some, you know, people went in there and they changed the Bible, and that's why. That's really an oversimplification. Now, what do you make of that? You know, so the easy comparison, well, it's going to be like the Bible. A whole different set of circumstances, whole different set of problems. So just to say that, well, it's going to be like the Bible, I don't think that carries a whole lot of persuasive power. And it doesn't demonstrate a whole lot of knowledge about what happened to the Bible in its history. But the goal of the BBT is to preserve Prabhupada's message, to preserve Prabhupada's writing, to preserve his message. And we're not in the position of, you know, that the books have come down by oral tradition. We don't have that problem. We do have other problems, like teachings of Lord Chaitanya, where the manuscript is lost, or books where that were dictated and the tapes are no longer existing. There are problems specific to Srila Prabhupada's books, and those problems we try to deal with as soberly and cautiously and reverently as we can. It is an option just to say, well, whatever is there, that's sacred. But some of the sacred things are pretty goofy. They're just obvious errors. Obvious mistakes. In some cases, it's a typist leaving out a line. Very common typist error. There's a word at the end of one line, and there's a word at the end of two line of the next line, and it's the same word, and so you skip from the first line to the third line. Because your typist is scanning. So a very common error to skip a line of type. And we've seen it come up in Bhagavad Gita as it is, where the obvious explanation for why something is missing is that a typist skipped a line. So do we preserve that and say, well, this is, you know, how it is, this is Bhagavad Gita as it is, with the line left out? Or do we say, well, here's the manuscript, the line's in there, we've gone back to Baladeva Vibhushan and we see that he said the same thing that's in that missing line. We don't have any reason to believe that Prabhupada wanted the line left out, so it should be in. And then something else, we look at it and say, well, you know, you don't have the manuscript, you don't have anything to go by, it's your idea that it would be better. Well, forget it. We're not into your idea. It has to be very carefully considered before any revision could be done. Same thing, example, artwork. If you try to restore artwork and you don't know what you're doing, you can make it worse. It has to be done by people who are very careful, very cautious, very well trained, very conservative. Otherwise, your art, you know, you turn the Mona Lisa into Alfred E. Newman. That's not what we want.
Have you seen the mood change over a period of years as far as understanding?
Have I seen the mood change as far as editing? Some places, in Northern Europe, where that DVD has been widely distributed, made by the North European DVT, mood has definitely... First of all, they were never that affected anyway by this American propaganda. But apart from that, because there were people who were doubtful or who really thought DVT had gone too far, but that DVD has changed a lot of people's minds. People see it and say, oh, now I understand. No, now I get it. Well, that's all of it. So, yeah, we've gotten a lot has happened since that. Also, it's subtly changed. And the first propaganda was, they've made all these changes that completely distort the philosophy. And then when we started publishing side by side the manuscript with the revisions, people stopped saying that because they realized they didn't really have a leg to stand on. And so they changed and say, well, it's all the little changes. They all add up, you see. So they've changed their arguments also. But I've seen over time that gradually the book's second editions have been more appreciated. Certainly in terms of orders, the BBT, you know, for every old book that's ordered, there's probably about 20,000 new books ordered. You know, the temples don't say, oh, we want the old books. It tends to be a disproportionately vocal minority. And that disproportionately vocal minority will probably go to their graves saying, you know, final order and don't change the books. You know, Prabhupada's the guru forever. We're all disciples of Prabhupada, and he never wanted any books changed. Hare Bol.
Well, are they selling many books? The KBI, who has been...
Bangalore sells a lot of... they're on this thing, because as far as I can understand, it's another way that they can be holier than everybody else. To say, we, you know, stick by the original books. And because they're a large temple, they distribute many copies. They're, I think, far and away the leading distributor of those books in the world. Every place else, it's small.
I remember my question. It was the women issue. Now, somehow there was something in there where sometimes there was some discussion, and I was just all working on the periphery of it, since I have it on this head.
Striya Sudra Tatavaishate Bianti Parampita.
I don't remember a specific verse or anything like that. There was just some controversy that the way the women issue had been discussed in Prabhupada's book, they thought that it should be softened. Or,
yeah, there were people who felt that the things Prabhupada said about women in his books were turning people off, or had the potential of doing that. And in fact, we got testimony from people who said that, yeah, you know, as soon as somebody sees that, that's it, they close the book. So the GBC was petitioned or implored to do something, and they passed a resolution last year that they should request the DBT to add footnotes to these these and similar passages to explain them. And we considered their advice or their request and turned it down. Because first of all, we asked, do you want us to explain these things or explain them away? Are we supposed to explain that he meant it or that he didn't mean it. And which explanation, you know, if he meant it or he didn't meant it, which explanation do you want us to give? Jai Goswami's explanation or Vishakha's explanation or Dravida's explanation or Gopi Pranadana's explanation or Sudharma's explanation or somebody else's explanation, because everybody's got a different take on it. I'll explain it one way, you'll explain it the next way. Someone says, well, Prabhupada, when he says rape, he doesn't really mean, you know, forced sexual intercourse, he means carrying someone off. And someone else says, well, the meaning of the word has changed over time, and Prabhupada intended the old meaning. Or Prabhupada didn't really mean any of those things, he just meant that the man is very aggressive. Or, you know, everybody's got a different story. So now which one do we put in the book as authoritative? My story or your story or the next story? Well, that's a problem. And then the next problem is, after we've dealt with what Prabhupada says about women, what do we do with what he says about philanthropists? I was just hearing yesterday that Prabhupada said that I've been requested many times to undertake philanthropic activity and I refused. They have asked us to open hospitals, and I have, you know, completely turned it down. You know, Prabhupada, we know, he always talks about this ism, that ism, philanthropism. He's down on philanthropy. Now, I guess we have to add a footnote about that. And now that we're in the days of where, you know, sexual, we're no longer talking about men and women and male sexuality and female sexuality, but we're talking about orientations and preferences and the way people are wired. And so to be what we used to call homosexual and what we now call gay is really just, you know, another way of expressing one's affection. But then we see these terrible things that Prabhupada says about homosexuals in his books. Well, we better do something about that. And on it goes. And then there are people who are respected as incarnations of God, and Prabhupada has said terrible things about them. And about scholars. And about Gaudiya Mathas. And about. So pretty soon you're going to have, you know, 20 pages of footnotes for every one page of text. So we just said no. And what we volunteered to do is we said we'll make a website where we'll deal with these questions. And we can put something on the copyright page directing people to that website if they have issues to deal with. And we've done that. If you go to bbt.info, there's a /tough ones where we... because there, devotees can express themselves at length, and Vishakha can say what she thinks, and I can say what I think, and the next person can say it. And that's very respected, to have commentary on existing literature makes the literature more important. And that different people have different opinions is fine, but not in the book itself. Is that okay? Oh, and this year also, due to widespread protests, the GBC nullified the resolution. They withdrew the resolution. They're resolved to ask us, and they did ask us, but then afterwards they resolved to withdraw the resolution to ask us. That's good. They recognized that it wasn't. Didn't seem the way to go. So we were happy about that. We felt that we'd taken the right approach. Anything else, or should we stop here? That DVD will be available, I think. You have a copy, and Yogendra has a copy, and more copies will be available. Those who have questions about the books, or those who'd like inspiration about Sankirtan, because it has wonderful Sankirtan videos on it. Very, very good to meet you. Okay, thank you all very much. All glories to Shiva Prabhupada.